I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. It's the Monday after the election here in Vancouver. Joining me now to look at what happened is the Georgia Straits editor, Charlie Smith. With the re-election of Gregor Robertson as mayor and a majority of his Vision Vancouver candidates on council, as well as majorities on parks and school boards, where do we go from here over the next 3 years? What happened to COPE, their allies in this election? Who got shut out? Where's the NPA? There's been some thoughtful analysis on the vote on the Straits website over the weekend, straight.com. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program, Charlie Smith. Good morning, Mr. Smith.
Hello, Joseph.
Thanks for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
So I was really surprised by what happened on Saturday. People on the right and people on the left, I didn't talk to very many Vision supporters over the campaign, but people on the right and the left I talked to didn't predict what happened on Saturday. They thought that some Vision councillors were going to go down to defeat. Some expected a mixed council. Did you foresee what was going to happen?
I didn't expect such a huge increase in turnout. And I think what happened was, I believe it was 24,000 more voters showed up. And Vision really got out its vote. And as a result, and this is what happens in municipal elections, it's like a tide. You know, what's your bottom vote total? You know, maybe your weakest candidate. And because a certain number of people are going to be doing slate voting. And I also think that Vision, by running seven candidates rather than eight this time, were able to actually concentrate their vote more effectively at the council spots. But you know, it was a great success for Vision. They ran a strong campaign, and they got out their vote, and we saw the results.
So more people turned out than when Larry Campbell was elected in 02, is that correct?
Yeah, it was 144,000 this time, and in 2002 there were 140,000. Population wasn't as large in 2002, but this was a high turnout election. And any time the turnout is high, the more progressive parties tend to do better. Mike Harcourt was elected mayor in 1980 in a very high turnout. Larry Campbell was elected mayor in a very high turnout. This time, what I found surprising was there was a very high turnout, but COPE still went down in flames, and their vote didn't increase that much. Ellen Woodsworth was up by about 2,000 or 3,000, but she came 10th in 2008 and then came in 11th this time.
Well, so Vision ran seven candidates, COPE ran three. They had this alliance. One would expect that if you're voting for Vision, you'll vote for COPE, but I guess that didn't happen this time.
Yeah, I think what happened is, I wonder if some of the Vision voters didn't vote the COPE slate, but threw votes to Adrian Carr, possibly in Neighborhoods for a Sustainable Vancouver candidate. And also COPE didn't have the capacity to identify its vote in the way that Vision, who knows what lists Vision has, but if they have, just hypothetically speaking, let's say they have the old COPE list, mm-hmm. and let's say they add on to it the Vision list. Let's say they have access to the New Democratic Party list. And then let's say, for the sake of argument, that they have access to the Federal Liberal list of identified vote. Then you're talking a really broad swath of the electorate that they're able to phone up with their money, identify whether the person's likely to support their candidates, and then remind them on election day to vote, and then offer them a lift to the polls. And so I think, you know, money is the oxygen of politics. Vision had lots of money, and I think that must have helped them. But I also think that shrinking their slate to seven was really an interesting strategy. I didn't know whether that would work or not, but it appears to have helped them.
So you said a minute ago that there were 24,000 more voters this time around. Was it just good lists and good phone skills, or did issues like Occupy Vancouver, did that compel people to vote?
Oh, I'm sure it was. And I think the NPA's negative campaign actually probably propelled more people to get out and vote for Gregor Robertson for mayor, because I think Occupy Vancouver was one aspect, obviously, but I think there were other issues. I think the housing, Vision candidates talked a lot about housing, and housing is obviously a major source of anxiety for many people in Vancouver. And another point, Gordon Price was mentioning this, was that the NPA didn't offer anything for renters, which is more than half the population in Vancouver. Vision, on the other hand, was talking about building rental housing, doing more for kind of the working people who can't afford to live in Vancouver. They were talking about a rent bank. So they actually gave tenants a reason to go out and vote. But let's not also overlook just how popular Gregor Robertson is personally. People like him, and I think a lot of people in Vancouver feel that he reflects their values and embodies their kind of hopes and aspirations, and they voted accordingly.
But back to Cope's collapse in this election, why do you think it is that Vision supporters themselves rejected Cope? I mean, is it just, I'm still trying to figure that out.
I think it's partly that Vision and the provincial NDP have wanted to, and these are the people running the party, they've always had a long-term goal of replacing Cope with a more centrist, moderate alternative to the NPA. And this has been going on for 20, 30 years in Vancouver. It used to be the Civic New Democrats would run a slate. In the 1990 election, it was kind of the reverse. What happened was Jim Green was running for mayor. You had five Cope candidates running for council, and you had five Civic New Democrats, including David Levy. What happened was the voters elected the five Cope, but didn't elect any of the Civic New Democrats. Gordon Campbell was elected mayor. He elected five NPA councillors, and he had a 6-5 majority in his final term until Bruce York actually died, and then that created the way for Philip Owen to get onto council. So basically, you had a 6-5 NPA majority because the Civic New Democrats couldn't elect anyone. And then in the 1990s, when the NDP formed the provincial government, Cope really went into the deep freeze. They had some serious problems. They elected one candidate in 1993, which was Jenny Kwan to council, none in 1996, and then they came crawling back in 1999 with Tim Lewis and Fred Bass. And then 2002, when Cope won their landslide, that's when you had some basically Civic New Democrats elected, like Tim Stevenson or Raymond Louis, and then you had some of the pure Cope types, more the, you know, Tim Lewis or Ann Roberts. And then they went through this whole period again of trying to shake it out, and now the Civic New Democrats are on the ascendancy, and Cope is back at the drawing board, but I think they'll come back.
Yeah. Well, we heard a lot in this campaign from independent candidates. Sandy Garasino had probably a bigger profile than Adrian Carr, yet she didn't even make the top 20. Why didn't they do well? Is it just a symptom of our system?
Yeah, I think there's a lack of name recognition for individual candidates. I think some of the independent candidates or the Neighborhoods for Sustainable Vancouver did not do a good job, I don't think. Maybe Sandy Garasino's an exception, but it's hard to reach the diversity of Vancouver because there's geographic diversity, there's kind of racial diversity, there's income diversity, there's tenants, there's homeowners, there's religious diversity. It's a very diverse community we're living in, and so a political party, I think, is more effective at reaching the different communities of Vancouver because you can run candidates who can speak to different communities. So if you look at, say, the Filipino community, you know, you get a guy like Gabby Calo running for park board for the NPA, very likable, upbeat, cheerful, charismatic candidate who is able to rely on his own networks to bring out a fair number of people to vote to add to the tent. And then you get someone like Ken Charco. Well, he's got his constituency of people and connections and networks. He brings them to the table. Sean Bickerton will bring his to the table. And before long, you're actually talking some pretty serious numbers. And it's very hard for an independent to run against that, or even a small slate of three or four people like Cope or Neighborhoods for Sustainable Vancouver.
So what does this all mean then, the result on Saturday? Does it mean that voters have said to Robertson, the way you handled the riot, the way you're handling Occupy Vancouver, policies like bike lanes and chickens and wheat, that's all fine?
I think it says that to a certain degree, but I also think another message out of this is you can't pull together a political party at the last minute, cobble together some candidates, and compete with machines, not just Vision Vancouver, but the Burnaby Citizens Association in Burnaby or the Surrey First in Surrey. These are entrenched machines that have identified their vote through several elections. They have access to lots of money, lots of volunteers, and they have candidates who are in the news all the time between elections and making connections. And I think the lesson is that we're really, in the bigger municipalities in Vancouver, it does seem that we're seeing a provincialization of politics, which means we're going to probably see more slates and parties rather than fewer. I think Cope, I would expect them to run a mayoral candidate next time. I would expect them possibly to run more candidates for council. That could create problems for Vision if Cope has any traction in terms of siphoning off some votes. Where the NPA goes, I think they'll be back. So, and then the Greens, who knows whether Adrian Carr is going to try to run more candidates in the next election. There's a temptation to do that just by virtue of she'll probably be at the top of the slate, but if she gets more candidates running, then they'll be able to bring more to bear in an election campaign.
So there was a lot of criticism for Vision over the past 3 years and sort of their sins, a lack of consultation and stuff like that that went on in council. Do we move on from this election that they're going to, it'll be business as usual for Vision and Robertson?
Well, I think they have been anti-democratic in that they hold their debates in private. Then they come out and they have these kind of sham council meetings where they pretend to debate, but they've already decided how they're going to vote. I don't think that engages the public or voters, and I think some people look at that. I think they're totally communications-focused, and they have their objectives. The other thing is we don't know if there's any scandals to come with Vision. Scandals can very easily tear down political edifices quite quickly. So I think that it's possible that Vision may have a tougher time next time, even though at the moment they look invincible. The other big question mark is the economy. Vision's running, it's an interesting financial situation how they're running the city council, and they're vulnerable there if the economy goes into the tank.
You had a really thoughtful piece over the weekend about these majorities that we saw, and not only in Vancouver, you mentioned Burnaby already, and Surrey, of course, and the other municipalities in the area, that these big majorities, they should be a source of worry in terms of, as you already mentioned, scandal and the sort. Did you foresee anything happening at the moment or something brewing? Do you know something that we don't?
Well, not really, but I know the one thing is there's big money flowing around in a huge way. Like when it's 120 days after the election that we're going to see how much the party spent, how much they raised, who donated what. And I think that will create a picture in the public's mind. I think Tim Lewis has already kind of gone down this road where he says he's calling them NPA and Vision the developers' parties. Mm-hmm. If Cope doesn't cooperate with Vision the next time and runs against the developers' parties, they may have some traction with certain people. I think the other issue, though, when I was talking about the financial situation with City Hall, is what happened was that the previous vision minority on council, 2005 to 2008, they opposed the tax shift, which was basically not increasing business taxes and making the business property tax, but making sure that that a portion went to the residential. And then Raymond Louis, as chair of the Finance Committee, he didn't want to raise the residential property taxes too much. So he kept it like the last one was 2.26%. So the homeowners are kind of happy. They say, well, my taxes aren't going up too much. The businesses are happy because they're not seeing tax increases. The problem is the spending has increased by 5% per year. So where are they getting their money? Well, one of the things was they went crazy on parking meters, where they go keep the parking meters till 10 p.m. There's parking meters on Sunday that, 25 cents for 5 minutes to park. And so some of the people who drive are exasperated about that. The other thing they're doing is they're allowing large rezonings because they collect community amenity contributions. So you take a project like Shannon Mews, Wall Financial Corporation will write a check for $20 million to the city. Some of that will flow back to the neighborhood for community amenities. Others are going right into the treasury. So what's happening financially is the city is funding part of its operations through development and these development cost levies with rezonings. The problem is if the real estate market goes into the tank, or if the pace of development slows, or if the public in various neighborhoods erupts in anger over the amount of development, the city's not going to have the money, and they're in a conflict of interest because they're the regulator, but they're also, the beneficiary of development. Mm-hmm. They may be okay for this term because there's enough rezonings that can still go on. There's Canby Street, there's the northeast side of False Creek, so there are opportunities, and False Creek Flats, which Vision Council's eyeing. So maybe this kind of Ponzi scheme can continue for a few more years, but eventually the city's not going to be able to generate to fund its operations through development indefinitely. And when that happens, there's going to be a cash crunch at City Hall, and whoever is in power is going to probably suffer the consequences with the voters.
Now, in the Straight Slate piece that was in the paper on Thursday last week, where the paper endorsed candidates in this election and the sort, you mentioned in there that Vision was in the back pocket of developers and the sort. And,
well, I said there's a perception among some of our staff.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So there's also the perception bleeds onto some other people. Like I had Sean Antrim on from the Mainlander. He's I guess you could describe him as a progressive or left wing blog, and he cited your paper as well as taking developer money in terms of advertising that we see in the Straight. Can you allay our fears that you're not operating like Vision, I guess?
Well, that's a good question and a fair question. I think the fact that we put Tim Lewis on the cover of our paper before an election, he was the only candidate who got the cover of the paper, may go a ways towards mitigating Sean's concerns. I think if you look at our Straight Slate, we gave Neighborhoods for Sustainable Vancouver lots of play. We had Elizabeth Murphy's picture in the paper twice during the campaign. We had Randy Helton's photo in the paper. We didn't recommend a majority of Vision or NPA councillors, and those are the two developers parties. I feel fine with what we do, and in the old days we were the ones who did more coverage of leaky condos than anyone else. But I can see, why Sean might look at that and ask questions. I also think our real estate column at the back, which Carlito Pablo writes a lot of them, is actually some of the more intelligent commentary about planning issues. And if you go to our website, too, we give, Ned Jacobs writes on our website, and he's one of the most harshest critics of, the developer agenda in Vancouver.
Yeah. Charlie, I appreciate your time today. These are interesting times. I also like the father income piece that you did in last week's paper. I really enjoyed that one.
Okay, thanks, Joe. I love your site, and you're doing a great job.
Thanks very much. The website for the Georgia Strait, straight.com. The editor of The Strait, Charlie Smith, on the line in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plata.